Hello and welcome to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
Scott, it's a delight to be here, isn't it?
It is.
Are you having fun?
I am having fun. How about you?
It's not bad. Sun's out. That's a good thing, right?
It is a good thing.
Kind of winding down summer. Sun has returned, but with that also heat and humidity.
Yes.
So we got a lot to get into today,
we
right?
We do.
So before we get started, I want to remind folks that are tuning in, you know, we always call them participants, right? Today it's more of the listener, right?
That's it.
So I want to remind you, our intent is to provide knowledge and information about lawns and landscapes throughout the state of South Carolina. So we've done this before. I guess I should let the cat out of the bag, right?
I would.
It's a little bit of sleight of hand, maybe not with you and actually on the day it's broadcasting, perhaps a little early, right?
2 days early.
Yeah, 2 days early. But that's great. So we're wrapping up midweek of probably the sunniest and potentially some of the warmest weather I feel like we've had all summer.
Well, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, humidity's still around. Summer's still there. So to me, weather's kind of a hot topic. Wouldn't you say that?
Yes.
So hot, humid. Hot and humid. I know today it was 93, 94 degrees as I was driving around. You get out and it's like, how quick can I get back into the air conditioning, right? Hot and humid, what does it bring? Increases disease. You know, some of the hot things that we've seen here in the last few days, and we'll get into this as we go through the show today, increase in disease. You know, I want to remind our listeners, how do we mitigate diseases in the lawn? We can water early in the morning, correct?
Correct.
We can increase air movement, so make sure we don't have a lot of undergrowth, things blocking air movement within the lawn, and we keep our lawns mowed at a proper height. Don't let them get too tall. Now, I say all of this, and that last one, mowing the lawns, I probably haven't kept up with that. It's been a busy couple of weeks, you know.
When was the last? Well, you have fescue also.
Yeah, I do have fescue. It's pretty tall. It's a lot of brown patch in it, too. A lot of brown patch. But
You're going to oversee.
Yeah. Right. It'll be the first time I've overseen.
So you basically just given up for this.
I have given
much.
Up. I figured instead of investing my money in another round of fungicide, since it's so close to the proper time to reseed a lawn, I figured I'd invest that money in a bag of seed. But that's going to be a few weeks later.
Right around the corner.
And that's going to be a topic that, as we go through today's show, that we'll get into. But, you know, the first thing I said is early morning waterings to mitigate disease, not late afternoons. We're still getting some pop-up thunderstorms. You know how I know?
Are you getting them?
Drum roll, please. It's that time. We're talking about water. It's the South Carolina weekly drought monitor report. Not quite a clear coloring page of an outline of counties within the state of South Carolina.
That is basically almost just one county.
One county is abnormally dry in the state of South Carolina as of, it was released Thursday, August the 16th. As of Tuesday, one county in the state, in essence, is still an abnormally dry D0, and that is Lancaster County, South Carolina. Congratulations, Lancaster County. You are still the one holdout who wants to be abnormally dry. The rest of the state looks really well. But that's one reason I think here at the end of the season, Scott, we're beginning to see a little bit of increase. Now, I'm still seeing some dollar spot on warm season grasses down in Georgia earlier this week. Noticed that on a golf course on Bermuda. Certainly my own lawn with brown patch. Now, I must say I'm probably 31 to 36 days into my last fungicide application, which is way too long. So it shouldn't come as a surprise that I have disease within the lawn. There's a lot that comes with that. And we're even seeing that probably on some plant material, things of that nature in the landscape. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what is our weather pattern going to bring in the next few weeks. You know, are we going to have, what do they call that, an Indian summer, where it's really warm, really hot all the way through the fall of the year? Who knows? Maybe we'll see that. So our pest outlook, we talked a little bit about disease, right, Scott?
We have.
What are you so intent over there?
I was just looking at you, said, you know, in the next couple of weeks. I was just looking at, I haven't even had a chance to even look at the forecast for this week.
So what's the forecast?
Good question. Let me put these glasses on.
Oh.
Yeah, 80s, 20% chance of rain, 40%.
In the upstate. So in the 90s in the Midlands.
And dipping back down in the 60s.
Well, that's nice. So we'll get a little reprieve in that.
Yeah.
I will tell you, looking at the pest outlook, there's a couple of resources. One I always enjoy is greencastonline.com. A lot of things going on. Brown patch, imagine that, painted red. Crabgrass. You know, that's one thing that we've had a lot of discussion or a lot of phone calls about here in the last couple of weeks is everyone went out and pre-emerged their lawns at the appropriate time of the year. But just because you did that, this year with the amount of rain that we've had, we're beginning to see here late in the season crabgrass and things of that germinating. Yeah. And, you know, I'm kind of on the fence. Do you treat it? Do you leave it? You know, first frost, crabgrass is gone. So maybe you just mow the lawn, learn to live with it, and pray for that first frost. That's what I'm looking for. That means fall's here, right?
That's right.
So, you know, gray leaf spot, you folks down in the lower part of South Carolina, it's still prevalent. It's probably going to be prevalent for several more weeks. Rust is really picking up. It's something we don't talk about a lot, but I think it's worth noting, especially those that have fescue bluegrass-type lawns, especially bluegrass seems to be a little more susceptible to rust. Keep that in mind, that those are still there. The other big pest that's out there, Scott, what is it?
Which one do you want to talk about? The one that I mentioned the other day?
Yeah, certainly.
One that
is there another pest out there that you've heard about? What else are you hearing of? What else are you seeing?
I'm not, you know, you're going to play trick questions on me. Okay. I'm going to go with army worms.
Army worms.
Fall army worms.
The beautiful fall army worm. They are here.
Anderson County,
I know, Oconee County, Pickens County. Seems like there's a lot. I haven't heard much from the Midlands at this point, but I'm sure they are marching their way there. After all, they are army worms. You know what an army worm is, in essence? It's basically a cutworm. But due to the time of year that it seems to happen in the Southeast, we've coined it the fall army worm. It's actually, we should coin it the late summer army worm. Seems to happen every year. Some years are worse than others.
I was sitting here trying to think on the way home today, when was the last bad infestation we had?
It's been a number of years. It's probably been 2 or 3 years since we've had a really bad infestation. But we're getting more and more phone calls throughout the stores. I'm seeing more and more evidence of this on some golf courses. And it's something that people need to be on the lookout and need to understand. At first, you think it's just a little innocent caterpillar. You know, the three-year-old puts it in a jar, brings it in. Oh, mommy, let's feed this. Oh, daddy is so cute. If you really stare it straight on at the head, they're easy to identify. Look it straight in the eyes, and you will see an inverted Y across its head.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cream-colored. The worm itself is... what would you call it, olive drab?
Yeah, olive drab.
Tannish, you know, color. Has a little green tinge to it. But if you look on its head, it has an inverted Y. Also, if you count the body segments, you remember back when you took biology and, see, I had entomology, study of insects.
That was.
Well, you know insects have segments, right?
Yes.
Worms have segments. Uh-huh. On the eighth segment, the tail end of an army worm, guess what you'll find? Four little black dots kind of in a square pattern. So between the eighth segment and really the head, they're easily identifiable. However, these are naked worms, okay? Meaning they don't have the little fuzzy hair and things on them. It's just skin, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't like sunlight.
Correct.
They get sunburned really, really easy. So if you're one of those that wants to protect the army worms, you can go out and, I guess, spray some SPF 50 to protect them, right? But what do they do during the day?
They burrow.
They hide out in that thatch layer. They disappear. So a lot of times during the daylight hours, we don't really see them. And that's normally what happens. And when people call, hey, I've got something. My grass was green yesterday. And when I got home today or when I woke up this morning – I looked out the front door, and I've got a patch that's as big as the hood of my car that is brown. We typically see it in Bermuda, More hence, than and fescue.
Those two grasses. I was out last night in my yard at midnight last night, walking to my wife, thought I was crazy.
Exactly. But you normally don't see them. The grass just turns brown. They eat it down to the nub. Okay. Well, it's still early enough. If it's Bermuda, you had some army worm damage, it's going to regrow. Yeah. The grass is going to be fine. If anything,
you just won't cut your grass for
it's a service. Yeah. You know, just think of it as a free service. They mowed the grass down.
And didn't charge you for it.
They took the thatch layer out.
There you go.
And you didn't have to pay a dime for it, right? It's a
and
free
rest
service.
Rest assured, if your neighbor has Bermuda, they're not going to be cutting the grass either.
Yeah, and they're going to volunteer their free service into your neighbor's yard if left untreated, right? The issue with the army worm, though, is the life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It is early to a degree. We're in this pattern that's more typical where we know we're probably going to stay warm a little bit longer. What we don't want to happen is another cycle of army worms in that lawn, and the lawn can't regenerate and regrow and become healthy before it goes dormant.
Right. Yep.
So we have to break that cycle. Sounds cruel, but we have to break the cycle. So there's a host of products out there. If you face the army worms, I'll give you a few more tips about them, Scott. You can be on the lookout. I was talking with the superintendent earlier this week. You know how he's been catching his army worm populations where they are?
Mm-mm.
Early morning hours with dew on the grass, he can see the crow's footprint across the dew on closely mowed grass. And he knows the birds are flocking in there, and they're feeding on these army worms. Look for the birds. If you come home late in the evening, the sun's about to set, maybe you walk out after you have dinner, and you see a flock of birds in the lawn picking at your grass, you need to go investigate deeper. If you suspect it and you really want to find the army worm and give it a positive ID, because we always talk about that at Yard Pros,
mm-hmm.
getting a positive identification on things. If you want a positive ID, you can do a little soapy solution, pour it on the margin of where you have infected closely mowed turf now because the army worm ate it, and where they may be marching to eat the lush green grass. And if you pour a mild soapy solution of water, you know, 2 drops of Dawn dish detergent, it doesn't have to be that particular brand. 2 drops of dish detergent, okay, swirl it in about 1 gallon of water, pour it onto the turf. It's not soapy enough to cause any damage to the turf. You give it 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes, you're going to see every insect that's hiding in that thatch layer is going to come to the surface. Then you can count. You're probably going to see the army worms. If you treat your lawn, especially if you spray it, like bifenthrin works really good as a spray. If you treat your lawn, they're all going to run to the driveway. Okay, so be aware of that. They're trying to escape. Don't back your car out of the drive. Be patient. Let them get off the driveway first to blow them off, clean them up, because it can make a mess. But the fall army worm, there's no doubt about it. It's here. As to how severe it's going to be, nobody really knows.
Right.
Starting a little early.
Now, different varieties of grass, you know, Bermuda being number one, what's the least at the bottom end of their?
Zoysia. And I think a lot of that is a couple of things I've heard of, and I hadn't really read a lot of research to this degree, but I have heard recently that supposedly zoysia may have a higher percentage of a certain chemical makeup in the cellular structure that the army, basically it's like castor oil to the army worm, they don't like it. I've always heard, though, that the army worms have a really tough time. Zoysia blades, they're stiff, typically. Mm-hmm. Especially like the emerald, the royal, those fine-bladed Matrella varieties. A lot of that's because there's an increased ligand content within the plant leaf structure, okay? Ligand's kind of a pliable material. It's why long-needle pine straw lasts longer. It has a higher ligand content versus slash pine. That's why it lasts longer. It's like a resin. The army worms can't ingest it, and as they crawl across and through that, it actually irritates the bottom of their bellies as they crawl. Because, you know, they have little miniature legs, you know. So
I got it.
Very small. I know. I'm trying to show Scott folks, if you were here, you know.
How tall their legs are.
Yeah, very small. But the thing with army worms is really interesting, Scott. An adult female moth, because it's mm-hmm. a moth, it flies around in the evening. It lays its eggs in a protected area, typically underneath like a magnolia leaf, or a big fat oak leaf.
Or on vinyl siding.
Or on vinyl siding underneath the eave of your house. Typically, we see armyworm invasions or infestations begin on tree lines and kind of march out into the open area. Underneath the deck, maybe you have a deck on the second story of your home. And if you look, you can see what we call the head casings. Golf courses, you can find them on flagpoles and flags. Once that moth lays the egg, and the adult is the moth, all right, it can live up to 20 days, but typically the average lifespan is about 10 days. Lays the eggs, it can lay up to 200 to 300 eggs per moth, okay? And you'll see this little egg casing. 3 days later, it begins to hatch. So it doesn't take long. And then that larval stage is what does the damage. It's the worm. That's what it eats. It eats, it gets fat, full, dumb, and happy, and it burrows in the soil as a pupa. And it is a freaky looking thing. If you pull grass back or dig it up and find pupa, man, I'm telling you, you really think you're like on Mars or something.
I was actually on NC State's webpage today looking at that.
They are freaky. So I don't want to touch this. They're not going to hurt you. The problem is, though, if you don't catch them at the larval stage, that pupa becomes much harder to control at that stage because now it's in the soil profile. So we've got to find a product that'll get into the soil. You have to irrigate it in, get it to the soil, plus the pupa has a harder case around it. So it's harder to get the insecticide to the insect itself to control it. But full cycle, 30 days on average, but typically this time of year, you can see them turn a full cycle and a full life cycle in about 21 days. So if you've had them, don't think, hey, it's done with, I don't see them anymore, I'm not going to treat, it'll be okay. About 14 days after you see the damage, you're very likely going to repeat the cycle again. So it's something that you really need to pay close attention to, take care of if you do see that in your lawn, for the fact that we don't want damage on something like Bermuda or fescue. You know, fescue maybe not as crucial, because we're going into the fall of the year, better time of the year for growing, but the Bermuda is beginning to slow down. And not only that, the Bermuda needs all the leaf tissue it can have because what is it getting ready to do?
It's going dormant.
It's going dormant. So what does it need to do? It needs to produce all the carbohydrates, everything it can, and store it in the stolons and in those rhizomes at the crown of the plant and below. It needs to store all the energy it can right now so that it can survive another winter. Hopefully it's not a winter like we had last winter, but it has to survive another winter. So you need to be on the lookout for the fall armyworms. I know we spent a good bit of time talking about it today, but I think it's imperative that people understand the life cycle of the armyworm. There's nothing you can really do as far as, hey, I want to treat my lawn and prevent them. That's just become very difficult with the insecticides that we have available today. All of our insecticides today are very short-lived. They're not going to persist long enough to really give any control. Plus, we're dealing with a moth, the adult that flies around. We're dealing with a larval stage, and we're dealing with a pupa stage. I mean, it's difficult. So the best defense for the fall armyworm is be in tune with your lawn. You know, spend a little time in your lawn. If you see an area that's 2 foot by 3 foot one evening you get home that looks brown, looks a little different, go do a little investigation. If it looks like the grass is shorter and something munched all the leaves off, you probably got armyworms.
And have seen them in lines instead of one, four or five different stripes.
So it's an amazing little creature, to be honest with you. It's hard to believe that one little insect can be that destructive.
Hence the name army.
That quick. That's why we have come to call this the fall armyworm, because it happens late summer, early fall, and they're armies of worms which have the appearance of marching across the lawn. You like that life cycle page there, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, you can take that with you. Hang it in the store.
I printed off the almost one like it.
Yeah.
Actually, I have them out on the counter. I put it on there. Please read.
So there are a lot of options for control if you run into that within your lawn. Certainly, we would like to work with you. So just let us know. So, Scott?
Yes?
We have a couple minutes left to the bottom of the hour break. I was going to give a quick rundown of kind of what I wanted to discuss.
Do it.
In the second half of the show. You know what I'm thinking?
What's that?
We need to talk a little bit about this changing season. Where are we right now? Feels like summer. Kids are going back to school. It's not really summer. Summer's, we're on the backside of summer solstice, mm-hmm. okay? Running in the fall pretty quickly. We'll talk a little bit about some of the things that summer, some of the late summer challenges that we may have, things that we may need to do in the landscape. A little bit about overseeding and getting ready for the fescue overseeding season for those that are in the upstate. A little bit about aerification and lawns, why you should or should not do it this time of the year. And then I'm going to finish out the show with a little bit about some of the new varieties that are up and coming at Carolina Fresh Farms.
Good.
A little bit of information about sod and sod production, because we don't always talk about that every week because we're fielding phone calls, which we enjoy. But maybe we'll have an opportunity in the second half of today to talk a little bit more about some of the new varieties, some of the tried and true varieties, and a little bit more about explaining sod and what you should look for, not only sod, but also in seed as you're making those plans. So you are tuned in to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. Scott, we got to tell them in the middle of the week, if you need to find us, how do they find us?
CarolinaFreshFarms.com.
Yeah, www.CarolinaFreshFarms.com. There you will find a link to our
Anderson location.
Stores throughout the state of South Carolina, correct?
Correct.
And you will find a link to those stores throughout the state of South Carolina with the store hours. You will have a map. Most importantly, you will have an email address so that if you have questions throughout the week, you can snap a picture and send us a quick email and perhaps we can respond. What do you say?
I do.
So, folks, you're listening to the Yard Pro Show. We'll hope you stay tuned to the second half of the show. We'll be back in just a few. Welcome back to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
Scott, it's a delight to be here on the second half of the Yard Pro Show. I thought we had a great topics and some discussion first half. What do you say?
I would agree.
Got to get a little excited. It's the second half of the
show.
It
is the second half of the show. I'm excited, man.
Are you?
I am.
I'm very
excited.
And we covered some great stuff.
You should be a coach.
I should. I should be. I'm going to be the turf coach.
Ooh.
Y'all heard it here first.
The turf coach.
The turf coach. That has a nice ring. Maybe we can do a little spinoff show called the turf coach. What do you say?
I think you need to start doing a YouTube channel.
There you go.
The turf coach.
I think I'm good. I'm very content and happy.
I mean, you've got plenty of time.
Yeah.
You could do it.
Yeah,
late.
I've got a lot of spare time.
Yeah.
I could do it sometime between the hours of like 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. and do it then, right?
That sounds like a good idea. I mean, I would go with it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I'm late at night,
turf show in my pitch black dark yard. Let me show you how to calibrate a spreader in the dark.
Oh, your neighbors would love that.
Oh, they would.
That would be awesome.
Well,
big lights
out there. I got one
neighbor
that would really love it. Yeah, that would be awesome. So first half of the show, Scott, in all seriousness, first half of the show, we talked a little bit about some of the hot topics and things of that nature, kind of the weather, what's going on. Fall armyworms, you know, spent a great deal of time talking about that because it's pretty important. A lot of things, you know, typically you get to this time of the year, and I know it's simple to neglect the landscape, neglect everything about your yard, because we're all busy. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know for me, it's moving a kid back into college. It's two kids getting ready to go to high school, one of them being a senior year. Boy, that's scary. It's things are beginning to pick up. It's Friday night football for a lot of folks, right? Your summer's done. You kind of want to put your feet up. It's hot. It's muggy outside. You're getting
you
to the point
right
you're miserable.
Down the head. Yeah. Hot and humid.
Yeah, you're getting to the point where it's just miserable. I'm done with summer. I'm ready for the season change. So you begin to neglect the lawn and think, well, it's a season change. Not much to go on right now. But there's a lot going on with this changing season. There are a lot of things that we all need to pay attention to within the lawn and landscape at this time of year. Because the things we do now are going to make our life so much better, not only as we go transition from fall into winter, but as we go from winter into spring. There are little things that we can do now that will make our life better and make our landscapes better.
Thought about this today. You know, last year, you know, we were in a drought in the summertime, and then warm season turf stressed out before it went dormant. This year, as much disease is out there, before that grass. The grass is stressed out now with the disease issue and this much moisture damage that could happen before it goes dormant, stressed out.
It could pose a problem, and my fear is there's a lot of turf out there that's injured, that's weak, that's not fully grown in. There's still people that are trying to get their lawn grown in. You know, I've had a lot of people in the last few weeks say, man, you're in the sod business. I bet you've enjoyed this summer with all this rain. Not really, because what rain brings, it brings cloud cover. It brings lower temperatures. This has been a challenging summer to grow things in. Now, if you had an established landscape and you didn't have winter injury, count yourself lucky. And you had an easy summer because, yes, we had ample rain, we had cooler temperatures, things looked better in the landscape. But if you had some winter injury, or if you're trying to establish a new landscape, or heaven forbid you're a golf course superintendent and you're trying to establish greens because you renovated, it brings about a whole host of new challenges. Yes, it's nice to go out and physically work in the lawn and in my landscape when it's cool and it's overcast and it's cloudy. But the case in point, tomatoes. I've had a lot of folks that know I grow a fair amount of tomatoes. I've had a lot of folks this year to say, hey, my tomatoes just aren't doing anything. It's not enough sunlight. There's not enough heat. There's too much water. And the water comes at 4 inches in an event, and then you're dry for a day, but it's overcast, and then the second day you get another inch and a half. So we're getting these bursts of just heavy torrential rain. It's made it challenging in the garden this year. It's a different season. And with the season changing, I'm certain there's some listeners out there that still have some lawns or still have some shrubbery that they're trying to get back in good standing and back healthy before we go into winter dormancy. If you have a warm season lawn, this is it. You got about one more opportunity this week to do a little bit of light fertilization, something like that, if you need to grow some grass in. After that, it's off the table. The season is changing. The days are becoming shorter by a minute, minute and a half every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't research it, but if I'm correct.
Yeah, I was just sitting there looking out the window, and I was like, man, it's starting to get dark, and it's 7:40.
Yeah, boy, you just 7:42? Gave it away. Well, this is a pre-recorded show, isn't it?
No, it's live.
So, but it's the days become shorter. Incrementally every day.
Mm-hmm.
Middle of June, June 21st, is the longest day of the year, summer solstice. Every year. It happens every year on the calendar. As we get on the backside of June 21st, every day we become a minute shorter, a minute shorter, a minute shorter. Now that the time we're in mid-August, we don't have as many daylight hours as we had really back in spring, or it's about spring daylight hours, right? We're headed back into that transition time of year when we're going to transition into fall a year. Then we're going to transition into winter. So the plants know this. Now, I know plants don't have brains. They don't have a central nervous system. But at the same token, I'm going to say it, plants aren't stupid.
No.
Okay? Plants are highly evolved, if you think about it, because they have no central nervous system. They have no brain, but yet they can sense this. You ever seen rhododendron? In western North Carolina during a drought, you'll see one branch of a plant is just brown and dead. Rest of the plant healthy. They have researched this and researched this. The plant knows that it's under stress.
It shuts it down.
It will shut a main terminal side branch off to protect the rest of the plant. Plants, man, I sound like a crazy guy now, but plants are intelligent. But they're triggered by simple things like shorter days.
Sunlight, yep.
Cooler temperatures at night. Which really comes back to soil temperatures, mm-hmm. cooling down or soil temperatures heating up. That's what triggers plants to do different things. The days are shorter.
Drought. Yeah.
The Bermuda grass, the Zoysia grass, the St. Augustine grass, the centipede grass is going to begin to slow in its growth. If you haven't seen it yet, it's getting ready to happen. You probably already noticed it. The color's not quite as rich as it was 2 or 3 weeks ago. If you go out, if you collect your clippings and bag your lawn, you may notice you're getting fewer clippings now. So things are definitely slowing down. There's no doubt about it, Scott. But, as I said earlier, you're grinning at me. As I said earlier, we really have to do things now that are going to impact their lawn and impact their landscape throughout the fall transition into winter and possibly next spring. So I think we need to talk about those things we need to do. Wouldn't you agree?
I would.
So first things, pre-emergent for lawns and shrub beds. That's coming up soon. Okay? Now that we see things, the soil temperature is beginning to cool a little bit. Annual bluegrass, Poa annua, typically is triggered by lower soil temperatures. That's when it begins to germinate, okay? Now, we're several weeks off from that, and we'll continue to talk about that in the coming weeks and give you a better judgment as to when it is. But typically, you know, certain parts of the Carolinas, like upstate South Carolina, it could be as early as end of September. We get down in the Midlands, we probably got to mid-September to possibly mid-October down at the coast, okay? So that's one thing. And, you know, just like spring of the year, pre-emergent can be beneficial in your shrub beds as well, not just there. Fall fertilization of shrubbery or fertilization in general of shrubbery. You know, earlier we talked a little bit about, hey, if you're going to put a little bit more fertilizer to push that Bermuda grass to fill in or push that zoysia grass to fill in, we need to do that now. But let's not forget about our shrubbery, because a good fall fertilization on shrubbery, even on our perennial beds, can make a huge difference in the green up next year. Because after all, those perennial beds, those perennials are beginning to, they're not dying back, okay? But the buds are starting to drop. The blooms are beginning to drop. They're beginning to look a little ratty, okay? Now, we don't want to, maybe a stalk, like a daylily stalk. You know, those brown out, we can pull them out. But we don't want to go cut them down. I've seen people do that this time of year. Oh, we got to clean this up. No, let them die back naturally, because they're still making energy, producing energy every day, putting it back into that plant.
Storing it, exactly right.
And they're storing that energy. You said it. They're storing it for next spring. The pruning of plants. If you want to prune something, maybe, you know, like for me, I've got a Clearera in my yard. Needs to be pruned, needs to be done now. Now, the L.A. Agnes, I don't care. I might prune it and, you know, right before the first cold snap, and maybe it'll half of it will die. I don't know.
You're praying.
Yeah. Aubrey, that's what I call it. Wasn't that, was it Aubrey from Little Shop of Horrors or whatever it was? Had all the plant had all the wild, goofy hair. Ah, I got it right. So that's what the L.A. Agnes is. But if you want to do some pruning on shrubbery that's gone a little bit out of control with the amount of rain and now we're getting good active growth, now's the time to do that before we get any closer to fall, because we want time for that new growth to harden off before we begin to get freezes.
I'm doing that this weekend because I've got the biggest abelias in Spartanburg County.
And if you
want, I haven't had time to do it.
Yeah, I'm not advocating going out and doing major pruning.
Yeah.
But shape them up, clean them up, because they should hold that shape through the winter month, and you can get them where you want them. And then we're not forced to doing it in the dead of winter, which is, well, dead of winter is appropriate, but we don't want you doing that in the fall, just prior
late
to
fall,
winter.
Right.
So, you know, it's late summer. It's time to think about that. The other one we got to think about is fungicide. Okay? Now, for our cool season lawns, probably not that important, because the Rhizoctonia brown patch that affects is a summer Rhizoctonia. Let's simplify it, okay? That's something that happens when we have really warm, muggy nights. We have warm soil temperatures. We have long days. We have prolonged leaf wetness. The large patch is Rhizoctonia as well, same genus of disease. I had to think there for a second, okay? Same genus of disease, but this happens when the soil temperatures begin to cool. When you walk outside and you see that bright blue sky in the morning and you got that crisp air, a little bit lower humidity, right? And you're going to sit there and drink a coffee in the morning on the deck and you're like, man, it feels like football.
I knew you were going to say, I was waiting for it.
I say it every year.
Feels like football.
Feels like football. But then you pull up your smartphone or one of those gadgets, or you go inside and you watch the weather report and it says, hey, there's a tropical system coming up from the Gulf and we're going to get a lot of rain. That's when you need to get the fungicide out, because when we have ample rainfall, excessive rainfall especially, warm temperatures but cool at night is when we see this inoculation of large patch on our warm season grasses. Most susceptible out there is probably the centipede and the St. Augustine. Next most susceptible genus of grasses is going to be your zoysias, and then third probably being Bermuda. And don't think just because I grow Bermuda, I'm not going to have diseases. I have seen large patch every year for the last 4 or 5 years. Large patch has become more and more prevalent on Bermuda. So we want to make certain that you know these little indicators. I know you feel like, hey, it's late summer, I have nothing to do, all I got to do is worry about is all I need to worry about is getting the kids back to school, and I can just neglect the lawn.
Yeah, I don't have to cut it no more. I'm done.
Yeah. No, you need to maintain your landscape. And there are little things you can do in the landscape now that are only going to help you and help that landscape mature and be healthy as we go into fall and transition into winter and hopefully have a better spring transition. So let's make certain that we're keeping up with those. Changing up a little bit, you know, we've talked a lot today. Fescue. Can I have a few minutes to talk to our upstate listeners who have a cool season lawn like myself? That time of reseeding is going to approach very quickly. I would like to let you know, seed has been ordered. That's news to you, isn't it?
I was going to ask you
Seed will come in at appropriate time, which will be shortly after
Monday.
Labor Day. Okay? There's no sense of bringing it in early because when you start warehousing seed, and it's this warm and you're in the South, it's a mess. Okay? The warehouse becomes a mess. We got rodents, you name it. We don't want to warehouse seed any longer than we have to. It's going to ship direct out of Oregon next week. It'll take, 7 to 10 days to get here. Should arrive shortly after Labor Day because the target date every year on paper is around September the 15th. Now, that's not written in stone. You notice I said it's on paper. Depending on our weather, it may be an appropriate time to seed. It may be inappropriate. Mm-hmm. If it's still 90 degrees during the day and we're not getting rain and the nighttime temps are still up in the 70s, probably don't want to put your seed out that early. But if we're 80 to 85 during the day, nighttime temps in the low 60s, we're getting a little ample rainfall here and there, then, yeah, you need to think about it. But as you go out and you're looking to buy seed, certainly we hope they all buy seed from Carolina Fresh Farms. I mean, after all, we sell seed, right? But if you're going to buy it elsewhere, we certainly understand that. We do have Carolina Blue 2, Shady Supreme, and Carolina Supreme on order as our three primary, this is what you can use. I personally like the Carolina Blue 2. It's what I grow on my lawn. It's 20% Kentucky bluegrass, 80% fescues. Two fescues. Looks like this year the two fescues in the Carolina Blue 2 are going to be Da Vinci and Rembrandt.
Okay.
Beautiful artwork. Guess what? That's why they named it that. Yeah. The grass is gorgeous.
And the bluegrass is?
The bluegrass is Wild Horse and Bordeaux. So, if you're a wine connoisseur, it's a no-brainer, Carolina Blue 2. It's got Bordeaux in it. How can you go wrong, right? So, the Blue 2 is our premium product. It just has really good color. It has really good color in the deep of winter because you have that bluegrass. It's going to hold more color through the depths of winter. But when you're looking at seed, look at your seed tags. Make certain that you're buying good, clean, pure seed. So in the coming weeks, Scott, we need to talk a little more about proper aerification of a cool season lawn, how soon before, which should be, 4 or 5 days before you reseed, if at all possible. Bust up the core so we don't want all the seed to migrate into the holes because then if we get a heavy rain, all the seed goes in the holes, and now we got little plugs of fescue growing in the lawn, and it's not a naturally spreading grass, so that's going to be an issue. So we certainly want to let you know that seed's on its way. Don't fall into the trap of thinking, hey, it's a little cooler this week, I'll go put seed out. It's in August. It's still too early. We need to wait till we get to about mid-September. Scott, I thought we'd finish up the show talking a little bit about sod. That's who we are. We are a sod grower, the last time I checked. That's our primary business. You know, we harvest sod. We actually have the farms. We produce roughly 2,500 acres of sod in the state of South Carolina, and we're very proud of that. And we have some things that are pretty neat with our sod. Currently, we're growing Tifway 419 Bermuda grass, which is hybrid Bermuda grass. A lot of people familiar with it. Centipede, Palisades Zoysia, which is a Zoysia japonica, coarser texture. We also have Royal Zoysia, Zoysia Matrella, a fine blade Zoysia. And we have Palmetto St. Augustine. But what I'm most excited about is some of the new varieties. They will be available in about 2 weeks in some limited quantities. The first one we'll talk briefly about is Tamstar St. Augustine. I have been impressed with this grass from the first day that I laid eyes on it in Dallas, Texas, of all places. Texas A&M variety, Dr. Ambika Chandra kind of finished up the research work on that. I think there were some other plant breeders involved initially and did a fantastic job. She bred a grass that is really good resistance to gray leaf spot, but more importantly has excellent resistance to southern chinch bugs, which become an issue in the summer months down in the coastal market on St. Augustine. So Tamstar will be available in about 2 weeks on a limited supply. Over time, we'll have more, certainly. By the end of the summer, we'll have even more ready, and hopefully next spring, have even more ready. So Tamstar is just a fantastic St. Augustine. Can't say enough good things about it. One of the other ones that I'm extremely excited about is Chisholm Zoysia grass. Chisholm is a japonica, very similar to Palisades. And one of the golf jobs this year, we actually used it on some creek banks, fairly shaded area, and it is performing outstanding. And the neat thing with Chisholm, it was bred for improved cold tolerance. So it opens up the door for those listeners that might be in that western, a little bit of western North Carolina tunes into the show, where they think they want to go warm season, but they're a little afraid of the cold tolerance. Chisholm is excellent cold tolerance. Now, it's also going to be excellent at the coast of South Carolina. So it's a really good grass. Think of it as the next generation of Palisades. You know, we'll continue with Palisades for a number of years. It's a great grass. I know we have a lot of listeners that have it in their lawn. The Chisholm has a little bit deeper, or I'd say truer, green color. And the Chisholm is a little bit truer green, but it has improved cold tolerance, a very aggressive grower, so it repairs very quickly. Just all around, I mean, great grass, Scott. I don't know. Have you seen it yet?
Yes.
You have?
I have.
So there's Chisholm out there. There's a little bit scattered. Before we release any grasses.
I saw that at a church.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. Before we really put any grasses out to the general public,
we put it out
in select sites, some sites where perhaps people can look at it. I know John Knox Presbyterian Church in Greenville, South Carolina, has a kind of a front lawn area now that is Chisholm that has grown in now this summer. Looks really good. We've had a couple golf courses grow it for a couple of seasons now, has done very well. I know there's a little bit up on the mountain on a golf course growing, and it seemed to transition well this spring. That was installed last year. Tamstar, I've never been one to sell a lot of St. Augustine in the upstate of South Carolina, Scott, but I've got a friend who has Tamstar in their backyard, and as cold as this winter was in Greenville, it transitioned just fine.
And I like the spring green up.
So Tamstar is a really – both of those varieties are really great grasses. We have some other ones that are more golf-related. We have one that's out of Oklahoma State. We're excited about expanding it as we wrap up the season. That should be a great grass, a new Bermuda grass, extremely cold-tolerant, and get this, extremely drought-tolerant. And in most research or what they're claiming – I can't say I've personally seen it because I hadn't tested it – but what they're claiming, 18% less water usage than some of the newer varieties of Bermuda that are being sold as a drought-tolerant Bermuda. So we're excited about the new stuff going on at Carolina Fresh. Folks, I want to tell you, thank you for tuning in to the Yard Pro Show today, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. It's been a delight. As always, you can find us during the week. It's pretty simple. You can visit us at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. Hope you have a great week gardening, and we'll talk to you next week.